All right.
We're going to get started. This is the March 28th, 2006 meeting of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. I'm presiding because the mayor is out on a scheduled absence. This is a public hearing meeting. There are three. So normally we don't ask people to speak on things that are not on the agenda. However, is there anyone here to speak on something that's not on the agenda? Okay. Well, that's great. Then we'll just start. We're going to do public hearing number one. Mr. Manager?
Okay. First public hearing is on a minor modification to the cellular tower conditional use permit located at 515 South Greensboro Street. David Hockey, representing Clearwire, has applied for a minor modification to the American Tower telecommunications conditional use permit located at 515 South Greensboro Street. The proposed modification will consist of the installation of a 3-foot by 3-foot cabinet at the base of the fenced-in tower and the installation of an antenna array at a height of 116 feet. The proposed minor modification is for the mobile internet use and not related to cellular phone usage. Staff requests the board review, deliberate, and make a decision regarding the minor modification request. And James Thomas has a brief presentation prior to the hearing.
Okay.
Okay, as Steve pointed out, tonight we are, once again, we're dealing with the South Greensboro Tower, which I'm sure many of you are aware of. This is the unique tower where it's actually any type of modification. It's got to go through a public hearing process. I sent out notifications to everybody within 200 feet of the property. I also placed the appropriate signage on the property. I have received one call from an adjacent property owner. I called that person back, left a message for her, and never heard anything from her again. I'll just do a short presentation. Also, this is, you probably realize this is the same thing as the other three from last week, but this one, like I said. As you can see, the applicant provided me with a, with the array shown on the tower. Once again, this is from the area from where the old try-in plan is, looking at the co-location. This is showing the overall layout of where other things are, and this is the applicant, obviously, it's shown in the red. It's the 3-by-3 cabinet. And that's shown where the array is going to be at 116 feet. I just wanted to point out, last time I think I was before you, if you look at the original CUP from 92, there was a question about the installation of the shrubbery. After that meeting, I went out there and looked at the property, and those shrubs have been installed. Mm-hmm. It's just a difficult thing to see because you have two fences within about a foot of each other, and, well, it's hard for me to squeeze in there and actually see them, but I did find the actual shrubbery, and it has been installed. The applicant is here if you have any more direct questions. Or if you have any questions of me, I'll try to answer them.
Anyone on the board have any questions? Anybody on the board have any questions for the applicant?
No.
Is there a motion? The members from the public would like to speak on this public hearing. There being none, is there a motion from the board?
Second.
What's the motion?
To close the public hearing.
Okay, thank you. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the ayes have it. Is there another motion?
Move the item.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed, the ayes have it. We go on to the second public hearing. And let me, can I have the list of people that signed up to speak, please? What we normally do is we have a presentation from staff, then we have a presentation from the applicant, and then I will call the people in the order that they signed up. And if you didn't sign up, after all those individuals speak, I will ask, are there any additional members of the public that would like to speak. Yes.
I'd like to, just as a matter of course, remind folks that are here that with relatively large public hearing items, such as the one we have before us tonight, we often do not make a decision that night. So chances are we are not going to vote on this tonight. We will take information, we will take comments, and then we will vote on it in a meeting within the next few weeks, just so people don't walk away disappointed or confused.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ready?
Yep.
Okay. Item 2 is a public hearing on a rezoning proposal for an R2 district slash establishment and placement of an OR-MU zoning district. And Trish will explain this momentarily. The Board of Aldermen enacted a 180-day moratorium on land use permit review of certain developments in the R2 zoning district on August 23, 2005, and subsequently directed staff to prepare an ordinance that established a new zoning district in that area. It's necessary for the Board of Aldermen to receive public comment before taking action on the draft ordinance, and Trish McGuire is at the podium to give you all an overview of the proposed ordinance changes. Trish?
Thank you. Good evening, everyone in the audience and members of the Board of Aldermen. In addition to the purpose statement that our manager provided for you, there is a little bit more background, and that is the board did review the R2 district in a work session in September and did specifically describe some of the types of things that were desired in a new zoning district to be considered in the area where the R2 zoning district is placed currently. And some of those provisions dealt with a desire to see mixed use there, emphasizing office and service types of uses and not emphasizing retail and restaurant types of uses, but including, as part of that mix of uses, residential specifically. The downtown zoning districts are illustrated in this slide. The area we're looking at for tonight's proposal is over in this location. Basically, the purple down in this corner is the current limit of the R2 zoning district. That district was established in 1986 as part of a commercial downtown rezoning that followed several years of study by the town of what the vision for the downtown was going to be and really for commercial development in the town as a whole. The R2 zoning district was established in this particular location as part of an implementation of a study that was done, a market study that was done of Carberry's downtown, and it emphasized the increasing residential density in the downtown, as well as buffering adjacent neighborhoods from the commercial development that was desired in the core areas of the downtown. There is a building height currently of 50 feet for the R2 zoning district and an open space requirement for that residential district of 20% rather than 40%. The draft ordinance you have in front of you this evening does propose to amend the zoning of 7 properties in the R2 zoning district, of which there are 20 currently, from R2 to R75. So that is a reduction in density, residential density, for those properties. It establishes a new standard zoning district called the Office Residential Mixed-Use District and proposes to place that zoning classification on 13 properties. And this map illustrates where the ORMU is proposed on the green properties, and the hatched areas show where the R75 is proposed. The ORMU has a number of criteria or provisions describing it. It's basically set up so that it is an office zone with 4 permitted office uses. And those office uses come from the B2 zoning district, which is located along Weaver Street in downtown. And that zone serves as a model for this district because of its proximity to residential neighborhoods, neighborhoods right nearby. And those, the permitted use, rather the permit requirements are again associated right from the B2 or followed from what is set up for the B2 currently. If a property owner seeks to do or desires to do something other than that which is allowed in the B2 3.00 use classifications, conditional use permit approval can be sought for a mixed-use development so long as the project meets a number of provisions. First of all, it has to have both a residential and non-residential component. At least half, but not more than two-thirds of the gross floor area of the project has to be residential, and the types of residential that can be included are single-family, two-family, multifamily, and group homes. The residential density is calculated as it is in the R3 zoning district at 3,000 square feet per dwelling unit. The dimensional requirements of the R3 are established for this zone in terms of building setbacks and other provisions, except that there is still a 50-foot height provision, but there is a step-back requirement for any portion of the building over 35 feet in height. And that provision follows from the RHDC overlay zone, which is a zone that was established to create some additional intensity of use, again, near residential neighborhoods, and so seemed to serve as an appropriate model for this this location. The non-residential uses that are allowed, again, are the 3.00 commercial uses. Those are office and service uses, and they're noted at the bottom of the slide. They include high and low volume client and customer traffic types of office uses, medical offices that are not greater than 10,000 square feet, and copy center and printing operations. The district can also allow up to 15% or not more than 15% of the commercial component of the project to be selected from the 2.00 retail uses, which are which include from the B2 zoning district specialty high volume and low volume retail uses. Staff has noted a couple of things in the report for you, and the underline here indicates that we actually did include this provision in the draft ordinance prior to it, the advertisements going out about what was included, so that the draft ordinance does include a new use classification for town cemeteries with associated permit requirements. Currently, we do have within this R2 zoning district and within the area affected by the overall rezoning a cemetery owned by the town. It is currently a non-conforming use. The staff has noted in the report also the likelihood of meeting all of the recreational and open space requirements, that might be a difficulty in terms of the intensity of development that's desired in the new zoning district, and so proposes that the board consider two changes to the draft ordinance. First, modifying it so that the open space requirement is 20% for the ORMU as it is in the R2 zoning district in that location currently, and modifying the draft ordinance to relieve the ORMU developments from providing a play field. I want to back up on the slides just for a minute. There's one other issue that is not highlighted in the report, but I want to make sure it's clear to everyone that this is a component of the change. There's a table in the report that deals with conforming and non-conforming uses, discusses those. There are several residential properties which are currently conforming, but because of the change to the office uses being the base uses in that district, these residential uses in this location and here will become non-conforming under the provisions of the draft ordinance. There are non-conforming provisions in the ordinance to deal with single-family residential development, and all of these do constitute single-family residential development. But the non-conforming non-residential uses are what are highlighted in the report currently and not the residential ones. And I can answer questions about that further if you have any as we go on. So. The staff has been in contact, or citizens have been in contact with the staff. We've had seven folks call and ask questions about the draft ordinance. You all have received a letter, and we have as well, from a representative of one property owner. There is a response included in the agenda packet to those comments. We've also received emails from two individuals, three emails from those folks. And, of course, it is necessary for the board to receive public comment before acting on this proposed change. The draft ordinance has been submitted to the Planning Board and to Orange County per the requirements of the ordinance and the joint planning agreement. The Planning Board has recommended adoption of the ordinance with some modifications. The staff to the Economic Sustainability Commission requested that this ordinance go to that commission as well, and they have begun their review but have not completed it and are requesting some additional time to consider the proposal. And Orange County staff did not comment on the draft ordinance because it is outside of the joint planning transition areas. Some procedural notes that one of which is related to what we have always done, and that is just what is the matter, what is the issue before the board in acting on it, on an amendment like this. And it does, from the statutes, indicate that the board's decision is based on whether or not such a change advances the public health, safety, or welfare, that other issues are irrelevant, and that other issues can be excluded from consideration at a public hearing such as this. A new change, new procedural issues have come up as a result of changes to the zoning statutes by the General Assembly, and the first of those is one that staff is suggesting the board take into consideration as they act on any amendments in the future, both text amendments and map amendments, and that is that the board members indicate whether or not they have any direct, substantial, or readily identifiable financial impact as a result of the proposed change. And then secondarily, this next provision is a requirement of the changes in the general statutes, and that is that the board adopt a resolution indicating whether you adopt it or whether you reject it, whether the proposal is consistent or inconsistent with adopted policies or plans. And we have provided a model resolution for your use, but Mr. Bowe would like us to provide two, so it's more straightforward. You pick the adopt or the reject version instead of combining them into one. So we can change that if that's what you all would like to see. The action options that are outlined in the staff report are five. There probably are many other combinations of them that you can consider, but they are to adopt the ordinance, to modify it, modify it as the staff has recommended, modify it as the staff has noted or as the planning board has recommended, refer to the economic development consultant before taking action, and leaving the ordinance, existing provisions of the ordinance as they are currently. The recommendation from staff is that you adopt action option one, which is to adopt the ordinance, finding it consistent with adopted policies, in conjunction with action option two, which is to adopt the modifications, or to basically direct staff to prepare modifications dealing with the open space provisions and the playfield requirements. And the next recommendation is dealing with that procedural requirement, adopting a resolution that finds this proposed ordinance is consistent with your adopted policies. I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Are there any questions from the board?
Yeah. Dan? I have several questions. First, how do we define play field?
There is a square footage requirement of 20,000 square feet is the minimum size, and then it increases in size based on the number of dwelling units that you go above 25, I believe. Is that correct, Marty?
Okay.
So there's some flexibility about a play field, but typically it's going to be a relatively flat area that's not impeded by too many structures or trees or things like that. There has been some interpretation made on some projects that had a very limited, non-constrained open areas where the developers hoped to keep some natural areas and use them for frisbee golf types of situations, clear out underbrush but maintain larger trees and so there's been some flexibility in interpreting that. Is that accurate to say?
Thanks. My other question is about the proposed rezoning on where it abuts Hargrave Street, and particularly in regard to the Paul Niebe question.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious as to how, we have of the several properties on Hargrave Street, we have two that are being included in the ORMU, then two that are not being changed, and then several that are being changed to 7.5 And I guess I'm curious what the rationale behind that side of the street is, how that's kind of laid out now in the proposal.
The rationale is that...
Would you put the map up? Because I have the same question.
Sure. I want to make sure that my map is the has all the information on it correctly.
I'm looking at attachment A4.
Okay. A4. Just want to check them. Well, the the Nebe property is 107. It's currently 107. I'm sorry.
Which one is that?
It's 107 under the GRAV right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yes. Now, that property is currently zoned R75, actually.
Yeah.
And it's not listed in the table
properties
that's affected by the rezoning.
Okay.
So its classification is not changing as a result of this proposal, but the property next to it is getting the office use added to it.
Okay, I see.
I mean, and that is to say, it is being proposed to be changed to ORMU. So it's not, 107 Hargraves is not one of the properties that's to
okay.
be rezoned.
But look, if you can turn back to the map.
Yes.
So my question is, you've got two that are affected.
That's correct.
And those two that aren't, and then three that are, I guess, getting the same zoning as the cemetery. Is
right.
that right?
Yes.
Or four, maybe. And so I'm just curious how those got divided that
well,
way. What
part
is
of
it?
The justification for keeping the property that the Nebe property in the, well, the Nebe property is not being rezoned right now, but the for justification for proposing to change these properties and these properties from R2 to R75 is partly because these properties are currently zoned R75 so that they are consistent with this neighborhood right here, the Carcourt neighborhood. So it's to make the zoning along Hargrave Street and Brewer Lane match with the rest, and here along Wesley, the town's property, match with this district.
Okay. And what's different about the bottom two properties?
Oh, these two properties are currently zoned R2, as are these above, but they don't have any access from Hargraves. This right-of-way is not constructed all the way down, and the access to these properties is back through the concrete plant and back through a private street essentially called Guthrie Avenue.
Right.
And so they visually and physically are really not connected with the Carcourt neighborhood.
Okay, so they're oriented in the other direction.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, they're set back further from what is the right-of-way that is not developed down here at the end of Hargrave Street. And so they don't have the same connection to this neighborhood that area does have, that the area on Hargrave Street has.
Thanks.
Let me ask a question. If 107 Hargrave Street will become, home, whatever, property, will become apparently the owner is negotiating to provide access to those properties, to get these properties. Doesn't that make sense that should be zoned as part of the new zoning?
Well, that is a consideration that could have been made. It wasn't as really the limits were shown and decided upon based on the relationship of those lots to the neighborhood, Carcourt, and not to the concrete plant property and both the developed and undeveloped portions of it. So this rezoning proposal didn't take into consideration a site plan that was in place or a possible site plan other than seeing that the street does extend to into this area, these lots front on it, that they have that association with the neighborhood, and that the change in use from R2 to ORMU would be a bigger impact to that neighborhood if it extended to the east side of Hargrave Street. I mean, that was the thinking behind the delineation of the lots proposed for the rezoning as they're shown.
But also, if you look at what's going to happen there in the future, if we adopt this policy, the two properties below the Nibi property are included. So it seems to be also part of that whole landscape, if you want to separate that and say, look, this is... It will provide the entrance to those and preserve intact, the rest of the neighborhood under the 7.5. You see what I'm getting at?
The attachment D map shows where those houses are placed, so that might be helpful.
Okay.
But to show what the proximity is.
One of the concerns is that the those two pieces of property that are currently R7, the 7.5 Nibi property, the owner is concerned about devaluation. Can we talk about that a little bit? Because I think it's part of what changing this zoning brings out. What are your thoughts on that? Because Paul Nibi is concerned that ORMU has a greater value as a commercial property. And so, his two pieces of property there, or the, would you show it on that one? Because that's a different orientation.
Sure. So, that's okay. That way. It's these properties.
Right.
Property. I believe it's actually... only this one right here, 107.
Yeah, 107 is it's right just here. One, yeah.
So it's this one.
So with the Gaddis property being zoned ORMU, it would have a different value, and he's very concerned about that. I see his point. I mean, it's an odd one little piece that does raise the question in our decision making.
Alex, I saw your hand.
I mean, it's parent. This is somewhat parenthetical, in that I understand the rationale that staff is putting forward for the R7.5 rezoning to try to make those properties consistent with the categories in the Carr Court neighborhood. However, as the guilty party, you've put this thing on the table, that solution, at least on first glance, appears to me to be a little bit beyond the scope of what I was looking for, frankly. I'm not exactly sure. I understand the rationale, but I'm not sure what problem that's trying to address. So, it's not really a comment. That's just sort of... Mm-hmm. Part of my thought process in this is trying to understand... What part of the question that was originally asked, that particular part of what's being put forward is designed to answer. So mm-hmm. I think some of the concerns that have been raised by folks who have called and emailed, we need to think about that.
But what were you looking for us to get out of this?
Well, the R7.5 downzoning, which is, it's still a residential use category, right? Mm-hmm. So the residential use category that's on the ground, R2, aside from what we're trying to achieve with the ORMU, I'm not sure what within that context the R7.5 downzoning is trying to achieve, aside from consistency with the adjoining neighborhood. But nonetheless, that's not a condition that's a new that would be a new condition on the ground. So we just need to think about whether, or I guess ask the question, what we're trying to achieve besides simply the notion of consistency with that part of the mechanism. That's all.
Before y'all go any further, I'm going to ask if you have any more questions for Trish, and then we hear from the public, and then we can come back to this discussion among the board. Are there any other questions for Trish?
Maybe just one real quick, but this could probably come back during discussion later. Did staff have any comments on some of the amendments that the planning board proposed, A, and B, this is from Mike, would those changes be allowable within the context of this public hearing, or would that be an alteration that would be significant enough that we would have to call another public hearing?
Let me look those over.
Okay. Maybe if you can just get back to me on that later, as well as the response to David Rook's letter as well.
Do you have another question?
Yes,
go ahead.
Madam Mayor, can you put that map again? Or I don't know if I think it was in the PowerPoint, was a colorful one. Can you tell me where the sewer lines, the closest sewer lines to those properties are?
No, I cannot tell you that. But there might be someone here who can. I don't know if Mr. Rooks might know, maybe, when he's up here.
That would be good.
Commenting, he can tell you where the sewer lines are. For, as you,
why don't we have him come tell us? What, Roy, do you know where they are? Okay.
Just roughly, I mean.
Okay. In general, the sewer lines will be running, of course, up this way and over towards the towards the stream area above Noble Street.
Okay.
And it's a draw through here, and I believe the one that's coming up near Robertson Place comes on up this way. So most of this area would go down toward it, flows back towards this main trunk line through here.
So if there's development happening and they got this property or in that area, there will be a sewer line, right?
They would be able to my knowledge, because this railroad is kind of a ridge in a sense. So, yes, they would be able to flow back down towards this direction.
They will bring in, they will tap from the bottom. I mean,
from
you
the
want
top
gravity,
down,
right? From,
yeah,
from up to down.
Right.
Okay.
In a southerly direction.
And you think if somebody develops that, do we require sewer, or they still they can choose to build with a septic tank?
Sewer.
Oh no, sewer.
Sewer.
That's what I thought.
Septic there.
Just asking the questions because that's one of the concerns. That,
Randy has an additional
question. Trish, has there been any feedback from the Gaddis family on?
Not to me. And I don't know of anyone who is else in the planning department who's spoken with the Gaddises about this, or any of. I mean, I have a list of the folks who have contacted me. Some of them didn't leave their names, but I can tell you who I've spoken with if you're interested. But it wasn't. No one from the Gaddis family has called that I know of, unless they didn't leave their name.
I was just wondering because, you know, if. 107 has concern and has interest in being ORMU. I'd wonder if the concern went the other way from the Gaddis family. So,
and they may be here tonight to comment. So,
let's see, Mr. Gaddis.
Yeah, I don't either, but I don't think I saw that name on the sign-up sheet.
It was not. All right, then. We will have first two people on the list are Mitch Virchik and Ellen Virchik.
Just so that you know, this is all really confusing to anybody who's not a zoning and planning wonk. I mean, I really don't even understand what the purpose of it is. What we saw, you know, when the notice came out was that there was some sort of rezoning plan for the cemetery. And, you know, can anybody explain to me exactly what the reason for that is? And, you know, am I to understand that the cemetery will somehow be compromised or that they're going to be digging up bodies or...
I think it's the other way around, Mitch. The cemetery is currently a non-conforming use, and by the changes that are proposed here, correct me if I'm misstating this, Trish, this would bring the cemetery use into conformity, so it would no longer be living in that gray area that it is currently.
Okay.
Is that a pun? Or?
Oh, no.
All right. Well, that's all I really wanted to know. Thanks.
And did your lovely wife have the same question? Or?
Ellen probably
has her own.
Yeah. After Mrs. Vercheck is David Rooks. So Mrs. Vercheck is not coming up?
Ellen?
Yes.
I don't understand enough to ask a question, so
okay.
Good evening. I'm David Rooks. I represent the Hunts. I represent Sam and Vicki Hunt, who own the property where Hunt Electric is located right here. In answer to your question about a sewer line, there's also a sewer line that crosses in this direction across the back corner of the Hunt property and then moves across this way. So there's one more sewer line there. The letter I sent to you and is included in your packet, really describes the Hunt's predicament. They are a business. They've been there for 20-some years. They like to stay in Carrboro. They are now a non-conforming use. That limits their ability to renovate, expand, whatever, their property. They would like to be able to do something with their property. Their building is reaching the end of its useful life. It's looking kind of raggedy. They would like to do something with that, but as long as it's a non-conforming use, A, there's not an economic incentive for them to do it, and B, obviously there are planning problems. So that's what we really want to be, is to be a conforming use. He wants to stay in Carrboro if he can. The problem with the ordinance as drafted is it does not make Hunt Electric a conforming use. And that's the reason I made the suggestion that I made, that we expand the business uses a little bit to incorporate what Hunt Electric is. Now, the problem that Trish pointed out is how your ordinance defines high traffic volume and low traffic volume. It defines high traffic volume as anything that's not low traffic volume. Then it defines low traffic volume retail very specifically, essentially as an appliance store. Something which has large items, a lot of floor space, but doesn't generate that much traffic through. I got to thinking about, and if that's the definition, what I've asked you to do in my letter does open the door to all sorts of high-volume uses or high-traffic-intensity uses, which I gather is not something that you wanted. So with that in mind, I went and looked at your definition of a retail low-volume traffic generator and thought about that. And it seemed to me maybe another way to skin the cat is to redefine a retail low-volume traffic generator. Remember, right now you're essentially saying appliance stores are. What I'm saying is let's consider supply houses that deal to the trades but not generally to the public. In terms of traffic counts, I suspect the traffic counts are about the same. I mean, I've been to Hunt Electric any number of times, and the traffic volumes are not high. It's essentially the contractor comes in, orders what he wants, puts it in his truck, and he leaves.
You want to skin cuts anything, say?
Excuse me?
You want to skin cuts?
What?
What did you just say?
No, a tradesman, an electrical contractor, comes to Hunt Electric, orders the supplies that he needs, puts them in his truck, and leaves. It's not a large volume retail outlet. Okay. So, in trying to find a way to help the Hunts out and to let this board get where it wants to go and have the Hunts win as well, That seemed to me as another logical way of doing it, simply redefine the volume of low-volume traffic generation to include our situation. Then if you do that, I hope it then makes it easier for the staff to find a way to fit us into one of the zoning districts so we could stay there. You know, ultimately, we want to build a building, either where we are or as part of a redevelopment of the area, but that's clearly what they want to do. As long as you leave them a nonconforming use, they can't do it.
Yeah.
Are there any questions?
That's a great win-win.
I guess that just goes to the question that I had for the attorney, which he'll, I assume, get to later. Which
I can answer that right now. I think I have no, David sent me the ordinance. I really don't have any problem with it conceptually. I'm not sure it's within the framework of this, what has been proposed and advertised for this hearing, because it would apply across the board. That is, this is a definition that would change. It wouldn't affect only this one zoning district that is being proposed. So, but that is not
a major redefining the use classification.
We'll have to
work. That's a text amendment that goes across.
Yes,
the
board. But I mean, if in the context of what's being considered here, the board says this looks like a good idea, we can easily draft it and get it in front of the board and bring it back. I mean, it may be a good idea, but it probably is going to require a little procedural.
Yeah.
Jumping through the appropriate steps to do it. That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
The next person is James Conahan, and then the next person after James Conahan is Perry Safran.
Good evening. I'm here in my capacity as chair of the planning board to go through these somewhat detailed recommendations that the board made. This was a unanimous vote. We generally supported the intent of what's proposed. But we did have several specific suggestions about changes. And they are in the the part of the ordinance, section C of the proposed ordinance has a number of listed details. And number three read, at least one half, but not more than two-thirds of the gross floor area of the mixed-use development shall consist of residential uses. We suggested a possible incentive here. However, the residential component of the mixed-use development may be increased to three-quarters of the gross floor area if 15% affordable units were included. So that's one part of this recommendation. The other part that's distinctly different is additionally use classifications 1.510, hotels and motels, and 1.520, tourist homes and other temporary residences, should be included as permissible uses so long as they comprise no more than one-third of the residential component. So we're suggesting two things here. One is you could increase the amount of the use that's residential if you include affordable housing, and the second part is that we like the idea that this could possibly be a place for small-scale overnight lodging. And then on item number four of subsection C reads, the permissible residential density within the mixed-use development shall be calculated as if the development were zoned R3. We propose that you add the following. However, the density shall be calculated as if the property were zoned R2 if 15% affordable units are included. So there is a second opportunity, a second incentive for making the residential component affordable, some of it to be affordable. Section, I have to find the one here. The ordinance proposes that the maximum height of a building shall be 50 feet but any portion of the building over 35 feet shall be set back. And it's a considerable setback, and given the way that buildings are constructed, it pretty much means that nothing's going to get built. You have to set back 2 feet for every 1 foot that you go up. And so we propose totally different language for this section, which, and this also brings back an issue that we've talked about several times before, is whether to express building heights in feet or in stories. And we prefer stories generally because over the long haul, you won't get a totally uniform, everybody building to that maximum. And so we propose this language: the maximum building height shall be 4 stories, except that a 5th story is permitted if 15% affordable housing units are included, and so long as the 5th story is set back 6 feet from the facade of the building. So once again, you get that story if you do affordable units. And second, on the issue of the setback, we feel that a 6-foot setback will achieve the goal of reducing the experience of the building at the street level, that when you go up that high, you only have to go back a few feet before that additional story is, it's not really relevant to the experience that a person has on the street. And then finally, we added 2 subsections to this part. And the first one reads, restaurant uses, their numbers, will be permissible so long as they do not occupy more than 1,200 square feet of gross floor area and do not operate outside of the hours of 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. And so this gives the possibility there could be a very small coffee shop, corner store place to get a sandwich. So we understood that the reason that restaurant uses were originally excluded were because restaurants tend to be very high traffic. So we suggested that the way to get around that, to have some restaurant use that you might want to have with this kind of, if it's a fairly intensive development, just to keep the scale small and to curtail the hours. And then finally, on streets that are widened or constructed to accommodate on-street parking, such parking may be counted towards an associated project's parking requirements.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a question for James. Did you all consider backing up the thresholds on the affordable housing requirement to basically to get us more affordable housing? And by that I mean to, say, for example, have the 1/2 of the floor area be the basis, and then if you go above that, it's contingent on the affordable housing. Or on the other hand, to have the 3 stories be the maximum, and above that, becoming contingent on the affordable housing. It seems, to me, just in a brief reaction, that you're a lot, we're likely to get more affordable housing by lowering those thresholds. I'm wondering if you all discussed that or considered that.
I'm not sure in that particular vein. We, what we were going for was these several opportunities to expand the intensity of the project if affordable housing was included. And there may be other ways, but these are the ones that we came up with. I don't know if that answers the question. I'm not sure.
I think the answer is no, so that's clear. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Alan?
In some respects, this is just a follow-on to Dan's. I think I had the same reaction as well. My first reaction was I thought this was very creative. There's a lot of creative thought in this, and applying the principles of the affordable housing density bonus, which is now producing some results to this, and that's a real hole in the ordinance. So I thought this was clever. Just on first blush, though, given the comments that Dan just gave you, do you have any sort of feeling or sense about about whether these numbers that you all chose as thresholds were hard numbers, or that just seemed to be the sense of the planning board as being reasonably consistent with how we do it otherwise. The latter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these are just numbers. If people like this proposal,
yeah,
that we could theoretically work with, and obviously we need to ask the attorney whether this falls again under the scope of.
My judgment, I think that it does. There might be a word or two I would tweak just to make things clear. But I mean, in responding to your specific question, I think this is within the framework of the public hearing advertisement, which talks about substantial changes being made, and they're all basically tweaking the same ordinance with additional provisions. So I think they could be adopted, or modifications of them could be adopted without any further advertising.
And we're assuming that, of course, the existing density bonus for affordable housing also applies. Thanks.
Can I ask you a question, James, on the item on parking, the on streets that are widened or obstructed to accommodate on street parking, such as parking might be counted towards an associated breaks parking requirements. Did you folks give any thought about, since, you know, we're based on the 2020 vision and what we're trying also to achieve with our goals of sustainability as we someday going to define it, did you give it any thought about providing incentives to increase bicycle parking?
We did not.
Do you think it's important?
I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One of the objectives of the proposal that we made was to, it actually reduces then the amount of square footage that an applicant would otherwise have to dedicate to parking. And since they're going to be providing the streets, providing the improvements, it gives them credit that they can use.
Any additional questions for Jane? If not, the next two persons are Perry Saffron and Alice Neeby.
Madam Clerk, Mr. Manager, and City and Town Attorney, my name is Perry Saffron. I am an attorney in Raleigh, and I have a business address of 120 South Borland Avenue, 27612. Madam Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to address the board. And I come here representing, in one case, Southern Equipment Company, which operates Ready Mix Concrete Company, and STGL, which is a property owner in the area affected by this proposed ordinance. As a first blush comment, I'd like to point out and agree with the commentary that has been made by your Economic Sustainability Commission that they would require or desire two more weeks of consideration so that they could evaluate comments and to make recommendations. In our evaluation of the process, and I bring with me two of my colleagues, Ms. Carrie Barbie, who is an associate in our office and a Carolina graduate, I might add, in the law school, and Mr. Steve Simpson, who is an advisor to my clients. If I may focus on the legislative process tonight, and not the judicial process, but the legislative process tonight, I understand that you have a desire, and if I may, I am quoting from, may I call you Patricia? Patricia's write-up for this board, particularly I think some of the initiatives that Mr. Zaffron has shown this board. As a residential district, it was considered as an area, and this is the whole, of the process of the property. As a residential district, it was considered as an area that would be buffered or protected from expansion and intensification of commercial development in the downtown. However, members of the community have noted that the unique location of this district and the opportunity it seems to present for community objectives related to mixed-use development, diversification of the economy, and increases in commercial development to be achieved. The draft ordinance that has been prepared seeks to balance the increase in intensity of development associated with new non-residential uses by lowering the residential density potential and maintaining the building height envelope associated with existing zoning classification. My client, STGL, purchased the property with exactly the same sort of visioning process that was described, and I quoted to you, a R2 zoning district that was an area that would be buffered or protected from expansion and intensification of commercial development in the downtown. And I submit to you in your legislative roles that that still exists, and that as you sit as legislators to make findings according to the location of this district and the opportunity it seems to present for community objectives, that one of the sustainability discussions that we see in your workup is the need for you to determine and test the market for these non-retail uses and whether or not the marketplace is interested in this area or these areas, and that we would submit to you that we have not found in our market research those kinds of interests. What we have found from Mr. Simpson's work is that the interest is residential, and that is why we submitted to you in your legislative role an application that is pending, and that kind of research indicates that the visioning process that you undertook before is still the focus of this property. As a alternative to what we would find in our research, and not finding any yet, Mr. Manager and Patricia, not finding any yet, any of the compelling legislative information that would drive a non-retail commercial use, we submit to you that it is not time to rezone, and if I may, downzone a piece of property at this location. That is not to say that there are not other forces that could come into play. And I think Mr. Zaffron, when he was capably approaching this, as other members of the board were, his vision is out in the future. But I don't think it's there yet, unless legislatively you can put before, I think, your citizens and the property owners those kinds of tests to the community of non-retail commercial type of interest. Otherwise, as a member of the legislature for your citizens, you downzone or you rezone a piece of property that sits idle over a long period of time. There has to be, in our opinion, an interest that is generated and a legislative finding by this body that research has been done. Otherwise, we find the most compelling argument that the visioning that you did before is still true today. As a last alternative, we would ask you, in consultation with your town attorney, to make or carve out those appropriate exceptions to zoning as legislators to committed, paid-up, processed, pending applications, and that those kinds of resolutions to examine fairness as legislators of what is in process can be accomplished by a dialogue between property owners, consultants, attorneys, managers, and ourselves with you as to what would be most appropriate for a pending process that is in front of you, only because it hasn't come up for consideration, are we not already in the process of asking you and going to get the permits to do what is now legitimately permitted? May I recap? We think that as legislators, you need to make findings that the vision that you previously had has changed, and that with information that can capably come from your staff, you submit to the citizens and to the property owners what it is that has changed or is compelled the kind of modification that you consider. We don't think that research has been done. And we offer to you in every way, Madam Chair, that we can to be part of that process and to share with you data that we find compels it to be residential. Alternatively, we ask you not to downzone or rezone a piece of property in the middle of an application, and that you carve out legislatively, carve out those kinds of appropriate dialogue and exception to a process that was started and is in the middle in good faith. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Saffron? There being none, thank you, Mr. Saffron.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Neeby?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Familiar faces, and thank you, Patricia, for your quick, friendly email and conversation today. It's most welcome, and I don't find that a lot. Paul Neeby is the property owner. I'm mom, Alice Neeby, and he couldn't come tonight, and so here I am, and it's probably repeating some things you've already heard. We feel that the reduction of density for the lots from R2 to 7.5 is unfair when the use of adjacent properties is being increased to non-residential use. This is especially true for the Neeby property, which is adjacent to the old concrete plant site. The Neeby has also offered grant to the access of the Gattis property, and I don't see him here tonight. So we feel that it's unfair to have the ORMU right next and then rezone ours from R2 to 7.5. This exempts us from having business development. And according to Patricia, we can only build a garage or something onto our property. So it also limits improvement to the property that we already have. And we always try to improve our property whenever possible. Okay?
Can you sell tacos out of the garage, you know?
A what?
Can you sell tacos out of a garage, right? Not
you,
appreciate you coming.
There's a lot of millionaires that have started out in a one-bedroom apartment, so I think, and garage.
That's right. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Are there any other members of the public that might like to speak on this matter? Yes, ma'am. If you could please give us your name to the clerk.
I thought I was on the list.
Nope.
We'll probably call you for the next public hearing. Is there the? Can I get the map back up here, please?
Roy.
Chris. Yeah, that map that was up there and then it was taken down.
Here's one.
Oh, great. Okay. Oh, thank you.
We got one.
Oh, that's a better one.
Okay.
Okay, come on down.
Hello, my name is Valerie Lambert, and thank you very much for allowing me to speak, particularly since I wasn't on the list. I come to you as a resident of Roberson Place, and specifically I live in, you know, one of these townhomes right here that abuts this property that's being rezoned. And the first thing I'd like to say, and I'll be brief in my comments, is that as a member of the Roberson Place development, a fairly new development, I and others find this whole idea very interesting, compelling, and exciting, that there will be this mixed-use, there's sort of retail area so that we can come across and enjoy the benefits of retail space here as well as in downtown Carrboro. The second thing that I wanted to share with you as a resident of the Roberson Place neighborhood here is that I and others were concerned about the rezoning of these properties here to the R.5. And the only thing that we could think the rationale could be is that some developer wanted to build 7,500 square foot houses in this area. And a different explanation has been presented tonight. And I just wanted to, I guess, get confirmation from you that those fears of having this developer come in and build these enormous houses in this area, the fears are unfounded.
I think I can just help you a little bit. R7.5 zoning categories are really hard to decipher and figure out, so don't feel bad. The 7.5 refers to a minimum lot size per dwelling unit. So what that means is it requires a minimum lot size of 7,500 square feet, which does not directly address the size of the dwelling unit that's put on it. So you kind of got it in reverse.
Okay.
However, anyway, we've had this conversation. I'm kind of curious, too, about the rationale behind it.
Okay.
Good staff comment on her question would be probably good.
Well, the R75 is a lower density zoning district than the R2 and a lower intensity zoning district as well. The R2 has some additional residential uses that are not allowed in the R2, such as a hotel and a motel, for example. But if you, just as an example, if you have a 10,000 square foot lot and you calculate the density under the R2 zoning, it's, you can develop 5 dwelling units. Under the R75, you could only develop 1 because you divide the square footage of the lot by the density of the zoning district. So it's a reduction in density for the R75.
Right.
It's not a higher intensity zoning district. It's actually a lower one, and it matches the zoning district that's here. The zoning district where your development is located is actually R3. So it's actually a higher intensity zoning district than this district here.
Okay.
But I don't believe it was developed at that level.
So Valerie, it actually provides you more protection.
Yeah.
Okay. And as the property on the other side of the railroad tracks gets developed, it will provide you more of a buffer there.
Oh, that's
so it's actually having the reverse effect of what you were worried about.
That's really reassuring, and because I and my neighbors would very much like to keep that that area, which includes, you know, right there the cemetery, as it is.
I don't think we're going to sell the cemetery off then.
No one in a plan.
Yeah, and this land right here, as you know, is very steep and would be difficult to develop. But if somebody wanted to level it and try to do so, then Okay, well, that's one concern I wanted to share. A quick question. There has been an assumption in my neighborhood that there will be a bike path that comes through right here. Is that, what's the status of that, and is that connected with this new vision for this area?
Do you know Lily Fisher?
No.
Brad and Kelly's daughter?
No.
They live near you.
Oh. Okay.
She's a baby, and I was thinking, well, maybe by the time Lily is riding a bike, that might be finished. But I don't know. What's the status on that right now?
I believe that the town is preparing bid documents and will hopefully be putting them out for the construction of the bike path to be happening sometime this year. I think that's the latest report I've had from Dale. And George is here. I was thinking that he might be here too.
The project is being put out for bids, and we're planning opening bids April 13th with construction.
Okay.
Taking so maybe before Lily can ride a bike. And
yeah. John.
So this rezoning does not affect that?
Bike path then? Go?
Sure. Yeah, the bike path is going to come up through the open space at the back of these lots in the Roberson Place development, and then there's a little an existing culvert. I can't say exactly where it is on this map, but then the bike path goes. The town owns this lot here at the corner of Wesley and Eugene, and it's going to go along the top edge of that lot, and it will feed back out into the street, and then the bikes, you know, and pedestrian traffic would be on the street here. There actually is going to be a sidewalk, I think, constructed as part of that in this location. Isn't that correct, George?
It's not part of the bike path.
Okay, that's right. We actually do have for another separate. That's correct. I'm sorry. Yeah, we do have an enhancement project, too, with the DOT to build a sidewalk along Wesley and up along Hargraves and Brewer to get the pedestrians up to the bike, the rest of the bikeway.
But they are designed to function as a system and in concert with one another.
Yeah, they're just separate
projects.
We're just
projects pulling it from separate piece, pots of money, you know how that works.
The bike path will happen first, though.
Well, that's really good to hear, and that was what I came here with, those questions, concerns, and comments. And then another one emerged, and that was this proposal to do away with a play area or some sort of play space that I was unaware was part of a requirement for building the mixed-use area. And just as a parent of two small children and knowing that there are a lot of children in this neighborhood and knowing as well that there are children in this neighborhood, I'm just wondering why that idea of doing away with the play space is considered, as you described it, as impractical.
The ORMU district is intended to be a more intensive result in a more intensive development than we would see if it were just a residential project. And so in order to support those uses, the parking requirements and so forth, maybe the loading requirements and those sorts of things tend to be more intensive for those additional commercial uses. And the staff was seeing from a site planning perspective that the playfield requirement itself creates a 20,000 square foot space that has to be set aside and be relatively free of any other activities. There are still recreational requirements that would apply and recreational points requirements that would apply, but they wouldn't be met through the playfield requirements. So it isn't doing away with recreational requirements as a whole, as a proposal. It's just doing away with the requirements to set aside measured. And it would be actually larger. For the size development that would likely go in on the site, it would actually be larger than 20,000 square feet, I'm pretty sure. And, you know, that's a half an acre of land, just as an example. And so it isn't intended to reduce the recreational requirements as a whole for the site, but just the necessity of meeting those requirements with that particular type of facility. So there actually would still be requirement for play equipment for kids of a certain age, and other types of things. So there would be outdoor play and recreational types of activities or facilities provided as we would envision a site plan being developed. Does that help answer your question?
Yes, that's very helpful, and I want to just go on record as strongly supporting a vision of this area that would allow us to take our children from this neighborhood and this neighborhood and enjoy the retail opportunity, the new retail opportunities, as well as the recreational opportunity.
Just for your information, I'm sure you walk to your neighbors next door in Hargraves and Eugene. There is a head start, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
that's
has
right.
Playground and has basketball and Carcourt Family Resource Center. Also, I think has a children playground, and mm-hmm. so there are opportunities for our kids to play together.
Yes. And we are so glad those exist, and we'd like to see that priority continue.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
John.
Yes.
Trish, while you're up there, let me just ask, as Valerie pointed out, the lot on Wesley that is owned by the town, what is the size of that? Yeah.
This parcel?
No. The corner lot, Wesley and Eugene.
Oh, here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking it's maybe 10,000 or 13,000 square feet. Thanks, Marty. It's about 13,000 square feet.
Also, in the charts you had, which were wonderful tools, by the way, there is, and I think I know where it is from having gone down to Hargrave Street today, an area that is that ravine by Providence that is, we don't know to whom it belongs. Would you point that out on the
That's all the way at the back here. It starts dropping off, though.
It drops off right there,
and
yeah.
This is
so it drops off on the south side of the Gaddis property.
Yes.
And is only accessible by foot at this point, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've never been in a vehicle on this lot. I mean, you could probably get close to it, but not into. You wouldn't want to get into it.
Yeah. And so it's unknown to whom that property belongs?
That's how the tax records have it listed.
So that could be dedicated open space. I mean,
someone could take possession of it, I think. There are means to do that.
I didn't get far enough down to see the topography, but I'm just wondering if the status of that space.
Yep, it's John.
Madam Mayor, thank you. Trish, can you remind me of somebody, George maybe, on sidewalks? You mentioned there's going to be a sidewalk plan on Wesley Street.
Yes.
What about Hargraves and Eugene Street? How do we have sidewalks planned for that? Are they, I forgot, I have a really bad memory, but where are they in the list? Are they in the list of sidewalks for the future?
I'd have to check. I'm not sure about Eugene or Hargraves. And the sidewalk, the enhancement project request was put in, you know, to link up with the bike path connection and kind of preceded the sidewalk bond. But we could check. I can check the policy and let you know. I'm just not sure at this moment. Many of the streets in town, you know, in the sidewalk policy are on the list for having sidewalks on one side or both, and that was what was fed into the sidewalk bond prioritization. So we can check, but I'm sorry, I don't know at the moment.
Yeah, I just bring that up because, as you know, I mean, this is a very valuable and historical, one of the few and last remaining African-American neighborhoods in the town of Carrboro, and there always have been concerns about, you know, maintaining the character of the neighborhood, but also if you look around, these folks have no sewer lines and no sidewalks, and we didn't even plan it to have access to that, which will, you know, help them increase the value of their own properties, as we are helping, you know, that happening around them. Mm-hmm. And by having that bike path going through there, I mean, we're also enhancing the quality of life of all the neighbors, but I think we need to take into account that, I mean, they're giving us access to, if we develop this other part, to increase the value of this other property, and these folks still don't have, you know, sewer lines or sidewalks. Not that I'm promoting sidewalks. I mean, there are neighbors here who can speak by themselves and tell us if they really want that, but I just want to put that concern on the table that let's don't forget how special this area is as we, you know, deliver on these issues.
We can check on that for you.
Roy.
I just want to, they do have, sorry. The sewer lines I was pointing out were the main trunk lines. I didn't get into all the laterals and everything running down the street, but to my knowledge, the Hargraves and Eugene streets do have sewer. They were, I think they were put in by Community Development Block Grant around 67 or 8, somewhere.
Can you then indicate me in the map really quickly where the sewer line is?
I'm sorry. I was trying to show the main trunk lines, but all the, I believe it's running in this down Eugene and Hargraves down to this main trunk line.
So every house in that neighborhood has relatively, I mean, has short access. It's, I mean, it took me just across the creek up in Barrington Hills, you know, $5,000 to hook into the sewer line crossing the creek. We're talking about a really short distance to hook into the sewer line.
I believe they're all hooked up to the sewer line.
Why don't we have staff check with Owasa, and then we can get back to you on that.
Are you aware of
that? There are owners in there that they're not even aware they have access to sewer. And actually, I think Mr. Levy is one of them that...
okay. There's two that don't. Okay. But okay. Right. So, I'm not familiar with every lateral, but I know the main lines are in the streets.
That's good news. Yes.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on this issue? And then you'll be next, ma'am. Okay. And may we have your name, please?
My name is Beth Flora, and I live in the Car Court neighborhood. And my neighbors are all in the third row over there. Unfortunately, we weren't really prepared to address a lot of the things that have come up tonight because basically we didn't quite understand everything that was going on. But a few things that people have said I just wanted to speak on and maybe also ask that we have a little time to be able to get our concerns to you. Or I would also, I don't know if you do this, but you would be more than welcome to come into our neighborhood. I'd open my home if you want to be able to speak to more residents who may be more open to talking if you came to our neighborhood. I know that Mr. Gaddis usually always comes to these kind of meetings, and I'm surprised he's not here tonight. A lot of us are homeowners. It is historically an African-American neighborhood. We are we're in a lower income bracket. So as far as some of the things you're proposing, I think as a whole, and I can't really speak for everybody because we haven't had that much time to talk about it, but we would be into preserving the neighborhood. And while Ms. Neeby had a concern about not being able to have commercial development of her property, I don't think that is the feeling of the rest of my neighborhood. We believe that Hargraves is a part of Car Court, and so we would want all of that to be zoned the same as Eugene Street. I think it would help just preserve our neighborhood. It's one of the last affordable housing areas, although home just went recently for a lot more than any of us could afford to buy. A lot of people, you know, either bought their house a long time ago, it's been handed down through families. I am an empowerment home buyer. Two other people in the neighborhood have empowerment houses. So if you're concerned about affordable housing, which you always mention, I would say that you would really want to preserve this neighborhood because it's one of the last and it's quickly, you know, coming out of that. So that's about all I want to say right now, is that we do have more time, and that seriously, if you do want to come into the neighborhood, we can show you around. We can show you who is a homeowner, who is an owner-occupied house, tell you a lot of history about it. And I could email somebody with my phone number or something like that.
Do we have any questions?
Can I ask you a question? Are you connected with the sewer line?
Yeah, I think that everybody on Eugene Street is. I think it's just the Neebies and the Reeds, which are next door to the. I think it's just these two. I'm not positive, but I know that I am. I'm down here. I'm right there, I believe. And I think everybody else on our block.
We have sewer line, but it's not very well. We have plenty of problems, too, over there.
I think a lot of people have had problems with that.
It is very bad.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Ma'am, would you like to come up and speak?
If I can have your name, please.
My name is Pearly Jones, and I am from the same neighborhood, Carr Court. And it was just, like you said, we didn't understand what it was all about. We came out to find out. And from some of the comments and things that I've heard tonight, we do have some concerns. And one thing y'all were asking about the sewer line, we do have a sewer line through there, but it's not very well. I mean, we all have sewer problems running down through there. Me, for one, I've had it two or three times in over a year. And as far as for the bike trail going through there so that our kids could come across, this lady was asking about the children from this neighborhood coming up from here playing. Most of our children are about grown, but we have some young ones coming in. And we have no place for our children to play. Up there at the daycare, it used to be that it was the neighborhood's playground. But after they put the daycare there, our kids cannot use that business on the weekends. At first, they had it locked off, but they did finally open the gates for them to play. And the sidewalks, we have no sidewalks. And no one discussed it, bringing it through our neighborhood. They brought it up to Wesley, around by the bikers, but sidewalks we don't have, and we have trouble with the water running down through our neighborhood, washing away the land. And no one has come in to help discuss fixing that neighborhood up in those areas down there. That was the concerns that I have about it.
Ms. Jones.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You said you have problems with the sewer line?
I mean, yes.
Does it backs up?
On Eugene Street.
When it rains, is that something, and I wonder if it's a system thing, or is it that?
When it rains, the water washes down here, washing the land right on down the hill.
And you know of other neighbors who have the same problem?
Yeah. There are other neighbors that have problems with the water washing. The ones that's with me have problems with the water washing their yards away. Your gutters are running over. We all do. Down at the lower end in the part in which I live, of Eugene Street.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones. Is there any other member of the public that would like to speak on this issue?
I'd like to move that we continue the public hearing until after the neighbors have time to have their discussions and until the economic sustainability group has had time to has had time to meet. And I believe that they asked for a date of April.
We need a date 13th. Certain, don't we?
So maybe if we could wait until at least April 20th to bring this back.
Mr. Manager?
What you normally would do would be to refer this to the next public hearing date, which would be the fourth Tuesday in April, which is, I think, the 28th.
Okay. Then I would like to move that we keep the public hearing open and that we bring it up again on April 28th.
Second.
I'll second.
Is there any other discussion?
Just to add to the information that we want to get, I'd like to ask the planning board, James, could you guys take another look at this in light of some of the comments that have been made this evening, particularly those items that Dan brought up about thresholds? And maybe just take another crack at it and see where you guys are in terms of thresholds. So I really like, I liked what you all put together, and I like the suggestions that Dan made as well. Obviously, we want the Economic Sustainability Commission to take a look at that. And as well, just ask for some response from staff on the proposal that was brought forward by David Rooks. Some of that looked like it might be opening a Pandora's box, and that those even the uses that David provided seemed a little on the open side there, Dave. So, but I think that idea of trying to bring some properties into conformity that are not conforming is a worthwhile part of this process if we can achieve it without creating additional problems. That's the only additional information I'd like to get at this point.
I'd also like someone to contact Mr. Gaddis so that we can get his perspective on the ORMU.
Yeah.
In addition to your... the consultant for economic development, could that also be part of some information we can get back on this?
That's not on this the time frame.
Yeah, right. It's not on the time frame, and it will. The information, hopefully, that we get from the economic development consultant will play into this.
Okay,
it's just not.
Okay.
Would you entertain? I think we got two invitations tonight from the neighbors. With that's very accommodating, and one of them even offered us her house. There's a community center there. There's the daycare center there. And I heard from the neighbors that they would welcome some information, and I think it would be really good for us to go out there into this neighborhood.
Okay.
And
I
encourage them to have at least a meeting or some members of this commission to go and meet with them officially, not just as individuals, okay, but as everybody, to explain them the benefits of the vision that we're trying to develop here, the same way that the lady from Robertson did. I think the folks in Eugene Street and Hargraves, they are no, okay, probably, what I heard tonight, they are not informed of the benefits. It would be good for us to take
I'm planning, that off. I'm planning to try and meet with Ms. Flora, and when I set that up, yeah, I can let anyone else know. Who,
yeah, might. I would prefer to deal with this motion, and then maybe after this motion passes or doesn't pass, then we can have another motion about a neighborhood meeting, but just to kind of keep the clarity of the two.
Okay. Is there any other further discussion on the motion before?
I agree with that. I would just caution everybody to consult with the attorney, because we are still operating under a public hearing on this matter.
Right.
Prior to setting up any meetings or discussions.
So we could just deal with the motion that we have and then deal with the...
Yeah. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, it passes unanimously.
Now, before the Tar Heel people leave, does anybody have a score from the 7 o'clock game? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
7163
Carolyn's up 28. So we'll probably win. Thank you very much. That was important information.
Sorry for that brief.
Do we want a motion about meetings?
Oh, wait. Let's hear from our attorney about the meeting before, with the neighborhood beforehand.
Well, because this is a legislative consideration, there's no problem with meeting with neighbors. It's a very different, either collectively or individually, in terms of the same kinds of concerns that you might have if it were a special use permit. It's not. This is a legislative process. You're talking about a text amendment and a map amendment. So you don't have those kinds of issues arise. The one issue that you obviously would have is if you had four members meeting at one time, it would be an official meeting. You'd have to give public notice. Otherwise, you'd be in violation of the open meetings law. So if there's no problem with one or two or three members going out and meeting with the neighborhood, either individually, collectively, set up, spontaneous, whatever. But if four of you show up someplace, you need to have previously announced it in accordance with the open meetings law. The town clerk would have to publish it, notify everyone.
Knowing that, what is your pleasure?
I would like to move that we set up an official meeting, not an individual meeting, but just give public notice so that in case more than four of us shows up, and to meet officially with the neighbors that had invited us.
Is there a second for that first, and then we can have discussion? Okay. There not being a second for that, it fails for lack of a second.
I think it's important that we all meet with the neighbors. I think for several reasons, it may be a good idea if we visit it in groups of two or three or one or. Just to keep it very informal and very open and having folks not feel intimidated or pressured, I think just going in little groups of less than four might be more effective than an official meeting.
It also personalizes it.
And it keeps it more personal.
But if more than four of us show up, then we give public notice.
Then somebody leaves and comes back another time.
It's too late. Somebody's got to go and come back another time.
Yeah.
I think we can do it in a very structured way that you would tell the clerk when you intend to go.
Right.
And then the clerk would let everyone know when people intend to go, and then you would not have that problem. How about that?
Sounds like Dan's already working on it. Why don't we just let Dan kind of communicate with everybody, and we'll
figure it out.
And then that'll work its way out. Yeah. And then everybody will know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then.
See, life's never simple. Yeah.
Okay, then. Dan will communicate with the neighborhood representative, and he will also let the board know so that we will not violate the open meetings.
Right.
Okay? All right, then. We will go on to...
Wait, one more thing. I would like to request information on the sewer.
Okay, I think we can get to that at the end of the meeting when we get to after the third one. We can ask for... Yeah, I wrote some notes down.
How long are we anticipating?
All right. Public hearing number three.
Okay. Hearing three is a land use ordinance amendment authorizing limited office uses in the B3 zoning district. And the town has received a request from William Douglas Mitchell, owner of property in the B3 zoning district, to amend the text of the land use ordinance to allow offices with a special use permit in that district. It is necessary for the board to receive public comment prior to taking any action. And Trish is at the podium again to give you what I hope will be a brief overview of the request.
Yes, I will. I do have a brief overview. But I closed it and I've got to open it again.
Thank you.
William Douglas Mitchell is a property owner in one of the B3 zoning districts in town and has submitted this request to add some office uses to that zoning district. The town staff has considered the request and notes that the addition of office uses to the district is not expected to adversely affect residential areas, nor is it expected to negatively compete with office development in the downtown or elsewhere. The existing ordinance provisions, in brief, are that the B3 zoning district is a neighborhood business district. It's intended to accommodate commercial needs that arise at the neighborhood level currently, and there's some additional language in the ordinance sort of adding to that point. There has been some interpretation issues associated with the way that zoning district is defined currently over the past several years, many years perhaps, really. But the permitted uses that are allowed there do emphasize retail activities, and banks and ATMs are the only currently permitted office or service uses. There are also size limitations and separation requirements associated with the B3 district. And there are these locations, currently five little areas where we have B3 zoning in town. Most of them do include non-residential uses. This particular area does not, this particular node, and this one does not either, but the rest are developed kind of in accordance with the B3 district.
Okay.
The draft ordinance proposes a modification to the definition of the B3 district to recognize that there are appropriate uses for this district that are compatible with adjoining residential areas based on their size and the scale of the uses, criteria that would be considered in the case of the amendment before you in conjunction with a special use permit application for office uses. The draft ordinance also revises the table of permissible uses to specify that three new office service uses would be allowed subject to the issuance of a special use permit by the Board of Adjustment, and it also revises the table of permissible uses so that one of the currently permitted office uses, the copy center printing operation, which currently is allowed with a zoning, it's a ZC permit requirement, so in some cases on small lots it could be permitted with a zoning permit. That would have to go through a special use permit too, just to kind of be consistent with this line of reasoning associated with the office uses in that district. Village Square Homeowners Association, neighbors to one of the B3 zoning districts, and in fact occupants of the B3 zoning district as well, since their property is zoned B3, have provided a letter in support of this change. The Planning Board has recommended adoption of the ordinance. Orange County doesn't have any issues with it. It is, again, outside the joint planning transition areas. And the staff recommendation is that the Board adopt the draft ordinance as well as the resolution finding that this amendment is consistent with adopted policy. Happy to try and answer any questions if there are any.
Are there any questions of Trish?
And Warren Mitchell, who's the son of the applicant for this amendment, is here tonight if you have any questions of him. And Bob Proctor, who's a resident of the Village Square Homeowners, of Village Square Townhomes, is also here.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Mitchell? There being none, does anyone have any questions for Mr. Proctor? Hearing none, is there any discussion from the board?
From the citizens?
Is anyone else from the public? I think I know everyone else out there, and they don't look like they're running to.
Well, I was ready to make a perfunctory feel good statement, but I guess Carver is a pretty feel good place to start.
There you go.
Yeah.
There
That's
you
what
go.
We want to hear.
And Bob's a happy camper. Move public hearing be closed.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? There being none, it passes unanimously to close the public hearing. Is there another motion?
Move the item.
Is there a second? Is there any discussion?
Yeah. I just want to disclose that I own a property in the B3 area, but the attorney tells me that this change does not have, I think the language is, a direct or significant impact on the value of my property, so it's okay for me to vote. I just want that to be clear.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Is there any other further discussion or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? It passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, you... Oh, okay. Actually, I would like the attorney to come back for a second.
Do we have other business?
We don't have other business, other than Alderman Herrera had indicated that he had some further requests. I think he wanted to make of staff with regards to the Hargraves, Eugene Street neighborhood.
Joe,
yep.
Excuse me just one second. Mm-hmm. Trish reminded me, because this is a new process, there's a second resolution that you all need to adopt with that, the findings piece.
Attachment J?
Right.
Is it Attachment J, Trish? I'm not sure of the attachment.
Okay. Can someone
move Attachment J?
It's F?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Check that out.
Second.
Okay.
There have to be findings that it's consistent with the town's policies and that it's it is reasonable in the public interest, and somebody fill in the because thing, and then you'll be fine.
Okay.
It is consistent with adopted town planning policies, including Vision 2020 and applicable sections and applicable sections of the downtown visioning report. Okay.
That's half of it, and the other is, and is reasonable and in the public interest because, basically,
citing the aforementioned policies, consistency with aforementioned policies cited in Section 1.
There you go.
Okay. Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
This new and exciting process is brought to you by your friends at the General Assembly.
Probably, it was probably because someone didn't indicate why they wanted a certain piece of property rezoned or didn't. The other, going back to what I was talking about before with regards to Alderman Herrera, if you would go ahead and make your request.
I mean, you said you had some notes.
I did have some notes, actually, and one of that was to see, one, to contact Owasa about the sewer pressure, because I know it's probably a gravity issue and probably there's not a pump near the main trunk, I'm sure, and because more than likely the because of when the sewer was put in, probably the size of the pipes as well. But if someone would contact us and give us a report back on that so we can give a report back. And the other thing, the question about the stormwater we need to look at and the
right.
this and the causes of the loss of soil. So that would be the two.
There's a topography issue on that slope.
Right. It also could be the the amount of surrounding impervious surface.
That's
as
exactly
well.
Right.
And I think the only question I had for the attorney, given Mr. Saffron's argument, I guess, would we need any advice or, given the pending
application?
Couldn't think of the second word.
No, I think he was, as I recall, I think he was addressing two issues that are really more policy related. One, as I understood it, was to urge the board to consider whether there's, let me back up a second. My understanding of what he was saying was that their information indicates that that at least their property is most marketable for residential uses and that there's not an apparent market for non-retail, non-residential uses, as I understood it.
And that's what I understood too. And I guess.
And what I'm and I can tell you that there's not a legal requirement that you have to make findings. It being not quasi-judicial but legislative.
Okay.
And therefore, it's up to your legislative judgment, sitting in exercising your judgment for the benefit of the town as a whole, as to whether or not you. Want to consider the extent to which there is, in fact, a market for the kind of development that would be authorized under the new zoning. I mean, obviously, that he's making the argument to you that there's not, and you can decide whether or not you wish to investigate that further, he's urging you to do whatever studies or consult with whoever you need to consult with to determine whether or not there is, in fact, a practical and economically viable market for the kind of zoning that is being proposed. They seem to contend that it is not, based upon their information, and you can do what you want to with that.
Without getting too deep into it, I mean, marketability, quote unquote, has not traditionally been a key decision point in making land use decisions.
Well, I can only tell you all this, what I've always wanted to say, and I now get to say it. There was a market for people who look like me in the early 18th century, and that's how my people got here. So I'm not always persuaded by the market argument.
Yeah. Huh.
Mike, is his notion that this is a downzoning, is that, I mean,
downzoning is a generally regarded meaning, and I'm not sure how it applies in this circumstance. I mean, normally downzoning, normally one regards as there's sort of a progression in zoning from residential being less intensive to office being more intensive to retail being more intensive to industrial and manufacturing being the most intensive. And generally speaking, as you are changing a zoning classification from a more intensive use to a less intensive use, it's generally regarded as downzoning. But also consistent with that approach, because you're going to a less intensive use, there's generally speaking, and we're all talking generalities here, as you go from a more intensive to a less intensive use, you end up with a situation where you're going from a more valuable use because of its intensity to a less valuable use. So generally speaking, when you're talking about downzoning, you're really speaking about more intensive to less intensive, but that usually means more valuable to less valuable. In the context, in this case, if you look at from the intensity standpoint, we're really going from less intensity to more intensity. But their position is, despite the fact that you could make perhaps a more intensive use, i.e. both residential and commercial, nevertheless, the particular zoning in their judgment is creating a situation where their property is being devalued rather than they're the other way around. So you have that somewhat unusual situation where, from an intensity standpoint, the zoning would increase in intensity, but their position is it would lower property values. So in that sense, I think they're using the down zoning in that sense, meaning our property is less viable, less market viable, perhaps less valuable to us under the new proposed zoning than it is under the existing zoning, even though you could, you know, make a more intensive use in the sense that it's generally regarded. I hope that wasn't as confusing as it sounds.
No.
Okay. That makes sense, but to go back to the central issue, Ford did millions of dollars in market studies in the late 50s, and they came up with the Edsel, so.
John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to express my frustration to the rest of the board for the lack of the second on something that I feel really strongly about it. And it's not, I want to do a constructive critique of the board because we just missed an opportunity to promote civic participation. We talk about creating a task force, New Horizons, to increase civic participation of our neighbors, our new neighbors in the newly adjacent areas. And here we have folks from one of the historically disenfranchised communities. 50% of that neighborhood does not speak Spanish, so I do hope that you do speak Spanish because we'll bring a translator if you want to meet with those folks also to get their feedback. And I think, you know, when folks are trying to reach out to us, we should take that opportunity and run with it. I just feel if we want to increase civic participation, we had a good opportunity. There are gatekeepers, and there are folks who, I mean, when we just miss an opportunity to empower a community that, you know, we take pride on promoting, you know, providing a voice for those folks who don't have one, and we just exercise exactly what we criticize from other communities that they do. So I just want to say that there's nothing to be lost to have an official meeting, unless there was some legal stuff that I didn't understood that would be in jeopardy. There's nothing to lose to have a meeting in their communities. We have done it previously in our neighborhoods. I don't understand. We're going to be doing it religiously and officially in Northern Carrboro. I don't understand why.
Well, first of all, I'll just respond to that. Let me go, because I've been pretty quiet today running the meeting. First of all, there are only going to be two board members working with the New Horizons, and it's for a limited period. The second of all, I think all of us have made a genuine commitment to go meet out with them, and I will take a translator because I don't speak Spanish. On the other hand, I think it would have been worse if we said, no, we're not going to meet with them at all. It is the method of the meeting. Just because there's an official meeting doesn't necessarily mean that people get what they want. So, and I don't think you should interpret it just because we're not having a quote-unquote official meeting that we value that neighborhood any less than we value any other neighborhood. And I sort of resent that. So you can go ahead and say what you
want. I don't sort of resent it. I do resent it, and I'm sure it's going to be it's going to be in the paper tomorrow. I'm sure your statement will be in the paper tomorrow. The reason I voted against it was because when you have a big official meeting, the press is there. And there's town staff there, and it can become very uncomfortable, not for us, but for the neighbors, and for the same reasons that folks are reluctant to come up to town hall, you would be creating that kind of situation in another setting, having small, intimate conversations between several members of the board and several members of the community. Is much more effective. It's much more intimate. You get more information. It's not intimidating. It's not a meeting where the press is there covering things. So to somehow imply that this board, that everybody on this board but you cares less about that community and it's somehow racist and somehow classist, can't paint me with that brush. Okay.
I did not.
Yeah,
I say
did.
It was a constructive criticism. I mentioned lack of an opportunity for civic participation. I did not mention, if you want to interpret it as that, I'm sorry you feel that way, but to me it was just a lack of an opportunity for
we to grasp an opportunity. We are going to be going down there. We're not going to be going down in a big flashy way with the press. We're going to be going down quietly in small groups, which is really the way you do community organizing, and we're probably having enough of this discussion.
No, I have a comment, which is, you know, my concern when you brought it up earlier, John, was, kind of hit me out of the blue, and this whole discussion came up in the context of a public hearing on the adjoining property that I don't see how any of this actually pertains to the issues related to that rezoning. So it wasn't really a connect for me. But, you know, I think the comparison to the New Horizons is a good one because Randy put a lot of time into thinking about that and developing a proposal and talking to people in the neighborhood and talking to staff about that and then brought something to the board. And I've only kind of piggybacked onto that. And I think, you know, if you have ideas about something that should happen with this neighborhood, I'm not speaking for anyone else, only for myself, that, you know, if you want to develop them in a way similar to how Randy did, I'd be very interested in hearing that. And, you know, I would support you, you know, in that, you know, if you want to look at that.
And I just want to say, John, that I know I didn't second that motion because I was thinking about Ms. Jones and Ms. Flora and thinking about what their comfort level would be on a first pass and that they needed to be compelled to come up. We needed to really invite them and they needed to know we weren't going to, you know, be jumping all over them with questions because they really want to learn about this. And actually, you know, you were talking about this being a very good learning opportunity. Sometimes when folks are put in a situation where they want to be learning something, they want to be able to be right in their own living room and they want to be with folks that they're real comfortable with. And we need to be in a smaller grouping. And for seven of us to you know, have a formal meeting, it would take staff, press would show up, and then it the ownership and the empowerment doesn't belong to the people who live there. So for me, I know that was flashing through my mind, and I was thinking, wait, because let's get to know the folks who have these concerns. Let's let them get to know us so that they feel as comfortable as folks in other neighborhoods to come forth and come forth often whenever they have a concern. And maybe that's the way to start. So I saw this as a very preliminary step, and I'm really glad Dan made the connection right away. So we've opened up that avenue to build on it, and it makes perfect sense at some later point to have a regular board meeting down at Hargraves or, you know, in another, you know, space there so that folks feel that connection.
I appreciate your feedback. I will take it to... Again, I mean, no offense to anybody. I still believe that it's a paternalistic way to look at folks, this thing of the small groups. I know Mrs. Wanda Page was there and all the folks, and, I mean, James, you know that this community doesn't, which you do meet with them, does not get intimidated, neither does other communities by meeting with large groups. We have been invited in the past, and we have done it. It is paternalistic. I won't say racist. I would say paternalistic to assume that people would be intimidated. Otherwise, they would not invite us to their homes. And it is, again, it was a missed opportunity. That's all.
You know what, John? I don't think...
Okay. Let's quit. Okay. Yeah, gone on enough.
We can get home in time to watch Duke get beat.
I'll just finish this up. I don't think it's paternalistic to try to be responsive to the way that you can most effectively gather information. The real question is, are we trying to get the real skinny on the ground, or do we want to schedule a photo op? That's what this is really about.
That's there a motion on the floor to adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
I'll move it second.